Mr. Redcutter, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Cutter?
On the 3rd of the 3rd, 1920, at a village called East Baldy in the county of Durham.
And what did your dad do for a living?
Well, in the First World War, my dad was in the service corps, a mechanic and engineer. And after retiring from the army, he was a manager of a quarry in Jarrow, a slab quarry in Jarrow.
How many were there in the family?
There was 4 within the family. My brother Stanley, who's the oldest brother, who was also an engineer. And the oldest sister was called Mercy. And she's all her life was in the nursing profession and finished up as a nursing officer in the General Hospital of Sydney. I had myself, which I've experienced before, worked all my life with my father practically, and except my service in the army, and I have a younger sister, Audie, who's still living down East Bowling.
And could you tell us a bit about your childhood, to give an idea of the circumstances?
Well, I can honestly say we all had a very, very good childhood. We were brought up well. With my father being the physician he was, we were comfortably off. We had everything that we asked for. Clothes on our backs. Beautiful, wonderful home. And when my brother and I were young, we could get around in the different place in England that people couldn't afford it, because with my father being in the position as a manager, we used to go around riding around in the lorries. We also learned to drive when I was even 7 and 8 years old, these big vehicles on the quarry, because the vehicles were taxis, you see. And you know, spin with vehicles around on second bits and that as well, you see. And, as I say, we had a very good child, but my father was a very big man. Very strict, and if he said yes, if he said jump, you jumped. If he said be quiet, you're quiet. And we're all brought up and well managed. As we go to church, the only time you're allowed to speak at the meal table was yes, please, and thank you, and grace before and grace after.
What religion were you, your family?
Well, we were Protestants, and we used to go to the congregational church in East Bowling.
Now, what school did you go to?
East Bowling Council School, and then later on down to Bowling Colliery Intermediate School.
How did you do at school yourself?
Well, not too good actually. I was a bit of a boy. I was good at geography and history, but the arithmetic, I wasn't very well up on that.
Did you leave at 14 then?
I left school at 14. I left school at 14 on the Friday, and on the Monday, at the same age, I started to work under my father to serve my time as a plant engineer in the fitter, and became a man straight away.
And that was at your father's quarry at Jarrow?
That was in Jarrow. That was in 1934.
What did being an apprentice plant engineer and fitter involve? What were they teaching you?
Well, it was actually about plant works on the crushers, stone crushing plant, the screening on the big excavators that used to hew and mine the stone from the quarry, also on the vehicles and that, you know, stripping vehicles right down to the last nut and bolt, rebuilding them all up and replenishing them all, changing oils, doing everything, painting and making them brand new from scratch, and compressors. On the windy picks, you know, on the road and all that. Everything to do with civil engineering as well as motor engineering.
So you were getting a really good grounding.
Exactly, yes. And if I didn't do things right, I was soon put in place. Because, as I said, my father was very, very strict. And I always, you had to do what you were told, otherwise you got the one across the, you got a backhander. As easy as that.
Did you stay there until the war started?
I started there when I left school in 1934. And I went into the army in 1939.
Right, I'll come back. So you were there, that was your job right up to... Had you actually qualified? You finished your apprenticeship?
No, I didn't finish. I was only 19 years old when I went to the army.
Now, what about outside of work? Were you in any of the boys' organisations?
Yes, but... Was it in the East Bowling Sea Scouts, which belonged to the Congregational Church, And there again, it was all very happy time because we used to make our own pleasure. And
what sort of activities did they organise for you?
Well, we used to go camping in regular. We used to get to the barn at Castle, camping, and we used to, and then we used to learn all the knots and how to take the heights of buildings and trees, etc. Camping, cooking, doing all our own food. We also had a boat on the Tyne. And of course, you had to, being a Sea Scout, you had to be able to swim before you were allowed to go into the boat. But we had a very good time. The Scoutmaster was called Mr. Norman May, a real good man.
Was there any military element to the Scouts, those, the Sea Scouts, or Naval? I mean,
not exactly. Not exactly, no. Just ordinary.
Was there much drill?
Well, just a little bit of marching and discipline. That was all. And then I remember in those days, happy days they were, because, as I say, child, we made our own pleasure. And on the Easter, we used to all go down to South Shields for the big Easter parade. And of course, because we the Sea Scouts, we're always in the front. We led the parade. It was in South Shields. Happy days. It's a word.
Were you in any other boys' organisation? Or?
No.
When did you leave the Sea Scouts? What age, roughly?
All right up in the army, 19 year old.
Any other interests outside, you know, were you big on sport at all?
No, not in them days. We just used to do a lot of walking around the village and that, but I was always clanking about with vehicles and motorbikes and
The motorbikes and things, did you need a license then? I'm not sure. I mean, or would you have a license?
No, I didn't have a license then. You see, on the quarry, it was all private land. The vehicles weren't even taxed. You didn't need to have the vehicles taxed, you see.
So, did you take any vehicles on the actual road?
No, definitely not.
So, the motorbikes and the rest of it, all in the quarry?
All in the quarry, yes. Tracks, you know, you see, and this is what put me in good stead when I came in the army, because later on, even in the South of that, if there was any dirty work that was always ready to cut and had it happen, because it relied on me to get in and get out, because I had the experience.
Longer, more experience.
More experience, that was it.
Would it be true to say that most people then couldn't drive? I mean, it was quite unusual.
Exactly, what many people could. Many people, not even adults, but as I say, my brother and I, we were only about 6, 7, 8 year old. I mean, we couldn't handle them like a man, because they were the old big lanes, big open vehicles, you know, with the solid rubber tyres on. And then just because vehicles didn't get the max on until 1928.
Now, did you spot war coming? I mean, were you aware that there was a war coming? 38, for instance, when
through my father, you know, he'd been experienced from the First World War, and he said, "Look," he said, "there's a war going to come off here sometime." So he said, "See that you serve your time. Try to get into the engineers, and you can finish your time." But I'm going down to South Shields, I couldn't get into the engineers, so I just joined the Royal Artillery.
Why couldn't you get into the...
They had the full quota.
So this was in May 39.
I couldn't get in the engineers. I had the full quota, you see.
So how did you go about joining up? Where did you go to sign up?
I just went behind the town hall in South Shields, Bolingbroke Street, Drill Hall. And I was in there as a mechanic and fitter.
And whose drill hall was that?
That was 74th Field Regiment, 296 Battery.
And you were joining...
Mr. Grant, the jeweller. So she was, you know, the shops.
So you were joining up as a fitter. You actually, not as a gunner.
No, as a fitter.
Was there any sort of, when you went to... You know, went in to join up. Did they give you a trade test, or did they just take your word? You were
no, just took the word for it then. Yes, no, I didn't get a trade test then. Because you see, with the war becoming, of course, in them days, one battery, the 293 battery, they had the 18 pounders, but we had the 4.5s.
The howitzers.
The 4.5 howies. Yes.
Now, once you joined, how long soon was it before you were kitted out with the uniform and everything?
Last year, really. Actually, when I joined, I got the old service uniform. It's photographing me in the bedroom there. You know, the old service happened to ride beaches and the putties and that. Even the spurs. There was nothing worse than driving the beat with a pair of spurs on.
So
that was the dress. That was the uniform, wasn't it?
And what was your training, your drill night?
First of all, I think you had to put, it was either 45 or about 45 drills in a year. But I used to go down regularly about 3 nights a week.
That was to the Bowling
Brook? Down to Bowling Brook Street, yes. And we used to take the guns from Bowling Brook Street down to the seafront, what they call the Dragon. Place down south there for the practice, for gun practice and memory up and that.
So they didn't do it in the drill hall?
No, well, it was the big necessity. Because you had it, you see, you had a limber, seeing the 25 pounder, which made the vehicle, well, you're talking about 30 odd, 40 foot, which in them days was a good length.
Now, you joined as a fitter.
Yes.
Were you a fitter driver? Or were you?
Fitter driver, yes.
And so, what vehicles did they have then?
In them, it was what they call the CS 8 Morris, 6-wheeler.
And what type of vehicle was that to drive?
A Morris engine, 6-cylinder engine, petrol engine. A beautiful vehicle to drive, a good, fast vehicle to drive.
What made a good vehicle to drive, in your opinion? What was it you looked for?
Engine power for a start. Good vision, good handling of the vehicle, and also good traction because it was a 6-wheeler, which gives you a feel. Because an artillery, people forget an artillery regiment, 99%, 99 times out of 100, he's not on road work, he's in field work, so you want good traction.
Grip.
If you did get into any soft. Put the Caterpillar tractor. There was a set of Caterpillar tractors that you put round the wheels that we used for a better grip. There was one with a vehicle drive, of course, there was no cab on, there was all canvas in the army, so in case of the split.
So you'd have the Morris,
yes.
And who'd be in there with you?
The number one, the sergeant, of course, in the archery, you see sergeant, the good sergeant, is called number one. Then you had your gun crew sitting in the back.
There was accommodation for them?
Accommodation in the back for the gun crew, yes.
And then behind that would hook on, would it?
Then behind that, you had your limber off the gun machine, which used to carry the ammunition, the shells and the ammo. Then behind your limber, hooked onto behind the limber, was the actual gun itself.
Now, what did they give you any training yourself, or were you, did you already know it all, if you see what, about you know, driving?
Well, about the vehicles, I knew it all, practically myself, because as I say, even before I left school, through the old quarry where I used to work with my dad, we had a lot of training, and it was all tracks, very narrow tracks, and on top of that, we used to have the back under hoppers, for loading, when we used to drop the tarmac down and the stones down. And you had to be exact, because once they open the door, you maybe get a ton of tarmac coming straight down onto the body. You had to be exact there, because if you were too far back, you'd be all over the cab, you'd be all over the vehicle. So you had to be exact, and that's where I took all my training from. Because to be a good driver, all you've got to have is good judgment and good sight. That's my theory, anyway. I've always done that.
What about coordination, you know?
Coordination as well. That's funny enough, there's quite a lot of people who can't coordinate. You know, they've always got two left feet. But I was very good at that. And of course, another thing in them days was people, another thing which people don't understand now, in those days, when we were serving all the time, the gearboxes was what they call crash gearboxes.
Could you explain that?
Well, a crash gearbox is where you actually change gear. You have two gears go round in. When you change your gear, you've got the mesh and they've got the mesh precisely, or the teeth ripped off, or you can hear it, you know, half a mile away you can hear people grinding the gears, whereas now it's all pre-selected gears. The gears is actually in mesh, and all that happens when you change the gear now, just move the gear lever up, ram the clutch in, it's working oil on the it slips and oil clutches, just clutches on the gears. But in those days, you had to drive. And another thing in those days...
So you had to judge it right.
You had to judge it. You had to coordinate your foot with the throttle, your left foot with the clutch, your left hand with the gear lever, and also the timing and the speed of the engine to synchronate the whole four all together to make a good change.
Now, would you actually have to think about that, or would it come natural?
At first you did, but later it just comes natural to you.
To a good driver?
To a good driver. It's a natural instinct.
So, did they try and teach you before, when you first turned up, would they sort of take you into the Morris and start...
In the army they did. So they take you around the block, you know, to see if you could handle these vehicles, but I was only in there a couple of minutes and I said, all right, back to base, cut to your all right. People in the army, they're not daft altogether.
So that was the end of your training?
That was it.
What about your fittings, because you're a driver fitter? Did they do any, they'd taken you on your word, did they actually sort of give you a trade test later on?
Not really. Not in terms of, when we got to France.
Right, okay, we'll take it to then, yeah. So while you were just training this first bit, when you were still in South...
There was no mechanical or engineering training at all. It was all just driving guns into action, getting guns out of action, you see, because...
So when you were on a drill night, you'd go three nights a week, usually, and you'd turn up, and where were they actually stored? They weren't inside the drill hall.
No, it was garages. Garages outside the yard, you see. You'd be allocated your vehicle.
You'd keep the same vehicle, would you?
Well, not always. Until you were assigned to a troop. A subsection in a troop. You see, then you have your same number one and your same gun, as you say. Which meant you all work together as a team, one, because one, you need one man to make one mistake. And all that works well.
So you were in 296 battery. Which troop were you in originally? Well, when they put you in a troop?
E troop. E.
And which subsection? Did it have a number or a letter? Or do you remember the sergeant's name?
The battery sergeant major took them was a fellow called Cook.
And who was your subsection sergeant? Do you not remember? It's all right. No problem.
Chapel Hutchison.
So you were in Hutchison's subsection. So you can always check that up if anyone wants to. So you come along. On a typical night, you'd come along. Would you have to hitch up, or would they hitch up for you?
You're the driver. You're reversing back. They hold the limb up, you see. Hook it on. Through experience, when it's on the car, you just feel the vehicle, you normally hear the spring lock clip, then you hear the gun, and all double up, everybody gets mounted, and you're away.
So, would it be your job to put, did you have to line up the hook, the thing accurately?
No, not really, you just back onto it, you see.
That was fairly easy for some.
Fairly easy, yes.
And then you'd drive down.
So you had no cover at the back, you just had to turn around, you were looking straight, just like looking over the back of an open pickup, you see. I mean, you can judge the middle of the vehicle, you can judge the middle of the limb and the middle of the gun, you see. Which made it easier for the gun trooper instead of having to twist and lift and shove and push.
Now, when you got the two things on, the limber and the gun, was it difficult driving through a town like South Shields to avoid, to allow for the...
It wasn't a case of any difficulty, it was just a case of judgment of distance and length. If keeping it off the curb a certain bit, because in those days, you see, you had tram cars, quite a few tram cars in those days. And if you were going to pass a tram car, you had to make sure there was nobody behind, because you had to start to pull out. You had to start to pull out well before you got to the tram car, because you were training a limber and a gun for the distance to get past. And if you were going to pass anything that was moving, you know, when you were practically alongside each other, for 50 or 60 seconds, nearly a minute, before you got clear, because you were towing the limber in the gun seat for clearance, you see. And then, as I say, you had to get a good wide pass to give before you start to pull in, to give yourself clearance for getting in, you see. And all these things had to be thought and judged. Even when you turn the corner, if you turn the corner to the left, well, you had to more or less, the same as an articulated wheel does today, pull out on the crown of the road to get round the corner, to allow the gun and the limber to follow you round, otherwise they would mount the curb, not you see.
So, but you were experienced enough to, you knew all that.
I knew all that. But another thing you see in them days, I don't know if you ever remember, all the tram car poles and the trolleybus poles, they were right on, they weren't on the path, they were actually on the curb itself, which meant if there was a camber on the road, you had to keep out a bit, otherwise the vehicle or your mirror would knock them.
So, did all the drivers do as well as you did with that? Because I can see how there could be accidents with an inexperienced driver with that.
Well, no, they didn't do all of it, because some of them were just part-time drivers, and I don't think they had the experience that I had. In fact, I know they didn't.
But did any of them have accidents, in, you know, travelling through South Shields?
No, I can't remember anything. Of course, you see, in those days, there wasn't the traffic, you know, but the only things in those days you had to worry about was the tram cars.
So you get down to the Dragon area, down...
On the beach of South Shields, yeah.
And then, would you actually practice dropping into action,
yes,
you know, the quick dropping in?
Yes.
Now, what was the procedure with that, with the 4.5 and the Morris?
Well, you just get your orders, you know, right, and go into action, like you're in action station, sort of, so pull your vehicle in. The gunners would hold limber, they would limber the limber off the vehicle, and then you would drive around, just stand beside the gun, just immediately behind the gun, more or less. And then that was more or less your job finished until the gunners had done the training and done the gun drill, you see.
So you'd basically be sat around there?
Just be sat around.
Were you ever trained in basic gun drill, just in case there were in action?
No. But as the years went on, we knew what to do, because we always just worked together.
So how long would you be sat there waiting for them then?
Oh, something like an hour. Maybe if you had a bit lagging, maybe cleaning the mirrors up on the vehicle, no tidying things up on the vehicle, because you know what, some of the men now in the jib out, they've got, you see, you have tools and that in the back of you, you're just kicking all the bits. And that's one thing I couldn't stand, untidiness. Because a vehicle, when I was actually driving, half your life is spent in the cab, and it's like a home. To me, that's one that I couldn't stand untidiness.
So they'd do it for about an hour, and then you'd drive them, you'd pick them up?
Pick them up again, then run around again, and maybe at the other end of the field, the gun, then you'd probably drop it to action, you see. For about a couple of hours each night, and then they'd be back to the drill hall.
What would you do when you got back to the drill hall?
Well, there was always a roll call to see everybody was there, return that, you know, and then just have a little bit of chatting, and all fell in and just dismissed.
Were you responsible for the maintenance of your Morris at all during this period while you were training?
That particular period, no.
So you were not less of a fitter driver than a driver in training?
I was more or less a driver then, that's right, yeah.
How did you get on with the rest of the lads?
Very well. Very well.
Were they similar lads, similar background?
All similar to myself, yes. And we all belong to the same area. I belong to East Bowden, which is only a mile and a half from South Shields. So we all knew each other's language, we knew all each other's tastes, and we were all more or less the same.
What about Hutchinson, the sergeant? What was he like?
He was a kind of fella, Hutchie. Not too bad. Kind of fella. Never, but if you'd done what you told, nobody bothered you. That was one good thing about that. Actually, I liked the army.
What about the sergeant major, Cook?
Oh, no, that was a different kettle of fish, that gentleman. There's things there, I could tell you there, but they shouldn't go on tape.
What about your officers then? Do you remember any of them in particular? Or did you have much to do with them in training? Before the war?
Well, I never had much to do with them really in training, but it was our captain, I remember, was Captain Parks. Very nice gentleman. And the lieutenant was a gentleman called Frank Beatty, who, by the way, used to own the tugs on the Tyne. Beatty's tugs on the Tyne. Now, that poor gentleman, it was 12 years ago, he was killed in London with an IRA bomb, and that really got me back worked up, because he went all through the war, through Dunkirk and that was. He was down there at the meeting. Bomb went up, but a shot went through his throat. That was that. A lad called Frank Beatty.
So, you didn't see much of the officers, but at that stage you were no problem with them.
The only time we ever made more arrests was we came to the cartel was just when you fell in for parade, it was inspection, a roll call, which the sergeant used to do, and the captain was standing behind you, said, you know, turn around, salute the squad ready for inspection, and they should come around, and that was more or less the only time. Or so when you, if there was an officer on parade,
Now, did you ever go away for weekend, just special weekend training?
Well, there was only twice I went away for weekend. That was down to Whitburn camp.
That's proper camps?
So that was a proper camp.
What would you do when you went to Whitburn?
Well, at Whitburn, the guns fired out to sea. That target is on the Whitburn training camp there.
That's not far away either, is it?
That's just way towards Southern Seaburn, yes.
And for you, that would just be driving the guns there?
Well, we would just take the guns there, and that was it. The gunners, it was mostly training for the gunners, you see.
Did you like being a driver, or would you rather have been a gunner?
Well, driving was me livelihood. I was brought up driving and that. It was my hobby. Driving was my life. And that's the way I liked it. Yes.
Did you ever go away for a full week camp? You know, where you go away for a week in the country?
No, not then. No, you see, with the war pending, you see, we only went to Whitburn for the train. In fact, I remember when we never even went to the East here. For the fighting, of course, we just used to go down to Whitburn, which was handy, you see. It was only another a mile just further along the coast, you can just fight out the sea.
What do you remember about the period leading up to the actual declaration of war on September the 3rd? Did you realise it was coming so soon?
Well, I don't think I realised it was coming so soon, but we were all being trained up and getting gradually worked up to stand by ready just in case anything did happen, right from when I went in from the May, and then I think it was about a fortnight before September 3rd, we were actually called up permanently, and we were billeted in a little church hall in Queen Street in South Shields, just behind Ocean Road.
And how long were you there for?
It was about 2 months. Then the whole regiment, the whole division, we all moved down.
50th Div.
The 50th, the whole 50th division moved down the south, down to Gloucester. And we.
Hang on. So while you were at Queen Street, you were just in this church hall on the floor.
That's right, yes. Yeah. Just ground sheet and your blankets and that was it, Bob Jones.
Had you got battle dress by then, or
battle dress, yes.
When had that been issued?
I think back this was about 2 months after I'd been in the army.
So just before you went...
With all your weapon equipment.
just before you went down to Gloucester.
That's right, yeah.
What were you actually doing during the 2 months at Queen Street? What kind of training?
Actually, we were doing nothing, just the same as we were when we were doing the drill, and they just going with the guns down to the park and the drag.
Did you have to take over any maintenance duties then as a fitter? Had that started yet?
No, not particularly, because we weren't doing any mileage at all. The vehicles weren't doing any mileage at all, you know.
Did,